politician talking about his brand new mission. Liked his plans, but they came undone when it got around to God and guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. 'Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns keep us strong. That's what this country was founded on. Well, we might as well give up and run. We let them take our God and guns. Yeah, out here in my neck of the woods, where God is great and guns are good, you really can't know that much about them if you think we're better off without them. Oh, there was a time we ain't forgot, you could rest all night with your doors open. Your prayers and you thank the Lord for that peacemaker.
Patriot Studios, this is Soldiers of Patriotism. With your hosts, Michael B. and Uncle Ben, good Sunday afternoon to you all, princes and princesses of patriotism. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday afternoon in Tejas. I don't know about in the great Tennessee Volunteer State, but we'll find out in just a minute. We got a couple of great guests today. Our friend Richard Gates is with us, as well as Ben Cunningham. Our buddy Kurt is going to deliver the rant today. I just want to say real quickly, folks, got a brand new website. As you know, Conservative Nation Radio Shows and Traditional American Movement are partners in this venture of trying to save America. And I just got my new website for Conservative Nation Radio Shows. I should say our new website. I'm not a my kind of guy, really. That one's just kind of slipped out. But it's at conservativenationradio.org. Uncle Bing has developed a TWUB, a Conservative Nation Radio Show's TWUB team. So check us out at TWUB and follow us there as well and be a part of our TWUB team so we can tweet God's message and the conservative message. I'm really excited about the show today. Bing, come on in here real quick. How's the weather over there in the Volunteer State, my brother?
Ah, it's beautiful, man. Weather's beautiful.
It's a bit hot. I feel like I need to take my shirt off here, except for that my webcam. If anybody's looking at me on Skype, I don't want them to see my fat belly hanging out over my desk.
No, that's a bad visual, man. Ooh.
It scares the hell out of me.
I've been laid up with Montezuma's Revenge here so for the last day, so that didn't help matters much.
Had you been down in Mexico, have you?
No, I don't know where I got picked this up from.
You know, I was just thinking about our intro song, our intro, God and Guns by Lynyrd Skynyrd. I think it best describes, that's one of those songs that really describes you and me and the nature of our show. And a little bit of news I saw this morning. CHLs, that's concealed handgun carry permits in Texas, up 40% this year. Up 40%.
Make Obama the gun salesman of the year.
I tried listening to some dude here locally in the Metroplex talk about why he thought that was, and he really skated around the issue, other than to say he does have a lot of an increasing amount of minority groups that are getting their CHLs. But he danced around the subject, and he didn't say what he really should have, which was it's up because of Obama. Obama has been so good to the firearms and ammunitions folks. I mean, really, for a man that loathes capitalism, he sure has been good for it in some areas.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, and the thing is, you tried to buy ammo lately? Good Lord.
Some of the ammo suppliers are having to ration it to their dealers because the demand is so high.
Well, of course, but the federal government, they'll get as much as they can, you know, so.
Well, let's get our brother Kurt in here to do the rant, and then I'll let you bring our guest on in the order they need to come in on.
Correctamundo. We got Ben, and then we got Richard coming in right after that. So.
Great. Well, we've got a nice chat room going. It's good to see all of our friends, Barbara excuse me, I'm sorry. Again, that's conservativenationradio.org. It's up and running. We've got show pages for all the shows, new email accounts for all of the hosts. It's our first names at conservativenationradio.org. So that would either be Michael, Brenda, Billy. If you're looking at our show page, you're probably seeing all of our new show logos for all of the new shows. We're getting ready for 2013, Uncle Bing. We're getting ready for a new year. Conservative Nation Radio shows and Trad-Am, we're about to lead the way and bust some balls in America.
Dude, I'm ready. I mean, I'm ready. It's like the phoenix coming out of the fire. You know, it's something else. It's something that's reborn, and it has to be. It cannot be the same old rehash thing. And we have to get tougher, and we have to start fighting tougher. And we have to start fighting dirty.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, look, I'm all about fighting dirty. You know, I was raised the kind of person that, you know the old saying, you know, if you bring a knife to a, you bring a knife, I'm going to bring a gun, so on and so forth. You know, I'm the kind of person that I believe in equalizers. You know, if that means laying some lumber across somebody's head, I'm going to do it. That's just the kind of guy I am. Excuse me, my voice is messing up a little bit here. Let's go ahead and bring Kurt in so I can drink a little bit of this Clan Campbell scotch and clear my throat.
Okay. Michael, Bing, Ben, everybody, and Trad-Am and whoever else is on there. The fact that Ben was going to talk about the rally in Nashville this coming Wednesday, December 5th, and this was in relation to Obamacare and it applies to the state of Tennessee. I had an incident half of last week that it just rung my bell. I said, this goes right along with this. And I'm going to tell you about what the conversation I had. And first of all, I want to say that I hope that Stanley up in New York, most of you remember him from a few weeks ago, I hope Stan is listening. And I also hope that the PhD fellow who came in and chastised Bing for giving Stanley the boot the next week after he essentially took up 2 hours of our Sunday afternoon show to hype his side of the story. I hope both those fellows are listening. There's a lesson in this for both of you, although I seriously doubt that either one of you grasp it. Periodically, I go to a particular doctor who is a specialist and a very good one. That's why I go to him. And he's being a good specialist. You've got to know that he's smarter than the average bear about lots of things. And politics is one of them. He and I talk politics every time I'm there, and recently was no exception. And we agreed pretty quick on since November the 6th, 2012, it's a whole different world for all of us. And the doctor disclosed this little scenario to me. He said that since the election, he had engaged in this, something a little bit out of the ordinary for him. He would open a political discussion with patients intentionally. He had never done that before, but he wanted to experiment. He would ask the patients if they were happy about the election. And depending on their answer would then govern how the conversation would go. And invariably, the people who were happy about the results of this past presidential election, then he would pursue the issue of Obamacare. Did they like that scenario? Oh, yes, you know, they always did. It was always, you know, well, why do you like it? Well, you know, I'm going to get my health care taken care of a lot cheaper or for nothing or whatever, you know. It's just, in other words, just everything's going to be roses under this Obamacare health care situation. The doctor would then say to them, okay, look, let me ask you something. If Obamacare is fully implemented, he said, it won't be very long down the road that one morning you'll come back and you'll find my front door locked. I won't be here. This business will be gone. So what are you going to do then? Well, why will this business be gone? Why will you not be here? He said, because I studied this Obamacare plan very carefully. I have to know what these things are all about because my business hinges on it. He said, and if Obamacare is fully implemented, I will not be able to make enough profit to pay the rent on this building, to pay my office staff, and make a living for my family. So I will close the doors, and I will go do something else. And he got different reactions. He said, some of the people look at him and say, well, you can't do that. Well, yeah, he can. It's his business. And he's not going to spend his life savings to keep it afloat if it's not making him money. Having thought about what the doctor just said, my mind kicked in and I made this, what some will no doubt consider a somewhat politically incorrect comparison. But politically incorrect or not, here it goes. I said, Doc, look, let me tell you what you got here. I said, I'm thinking about a conversation I had recently about a lady that I know, a very highly educated lady. As a matter of fact, she's a PhD. And she was heard to state rather haughtily, well, I'm going to vote for President Obama again. I said, okay, you got her. This PhD, smart woman. Now, you got a patient or patients of yours that have come in here, and they're not that qualified. What you got here is the human equivalent of two different monkeys. One monkey grew up in a laboratory, nurtured and taken good care of and carefully trained by experts to the point that that monkey could operate complicated machinery that would do difficult repetitive tasks. It's an amazing accomplishment on the part of that well-trained monkey. The other monkey was simply lifted out of its environment and put in a position where the only thing it knew how to do was accept the food that was handed to it. Could you find a more stark contrast in people and in education levels and capabilities than those two? Now, those are not monkeys we're talking about here, folks. These are people. Here's my question. How is it that people of that educational contrast could yet come to the same thinking level philosophically, spiritually, politically, they're on the same level? At some point in time, I hope someone will be able to explain to me just how it is that that situation in life developed. And that's my rant, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, that's a good rant, man. I'll tell you what, I don't know the answer to that, too. You know, I mean, you got a lot of people, you know, in different walks of life that are the same, Hollywood types, especially that kind of thing. But you wonder, how do they go through their lives, you know, the way they are? You know, because they're like in this kind of fantasy world or something. I think some of them are, some of them aren't. And I'm wondering what what drives them. I guess it's maybe upbringing.
Well, I thought it was a great rant. I just, you know, I want to, right there towards the beginning, you know, we get a lot of talk about old Stan, and that show that afternoon was what it ended up being. I think we all learned a lot from it. Stan's welcome to join us, but this show is about Kurt and about Chuck and Fred and Bing and our guests like Richard and Ben and all the guests that we've had. I think everybody knows the direction that we like to take this show. And, I hope we can educate folks, Kurt, like Stan the Lib. I don't hold out much hope for it. But I do want to thank you for doing the rant today. And I want to invite, I've put this message out on Facebook before. Anybody that's listening, anybody in the chat room, I want to invite you all. This is y'all's show. Bing and I, this is our show, and I want it to be about the people that listen to this show and spend 2 hours with us every Sunday faithfully. So if you've got a rant, if you got a rant, you just email me or Bing and let us know that you got a rant, and we'll put you on to open the show. I better back off for just a minute. My throat's giving me a hard time. Bing, go ahead.
I'll cover it for you, man. That's no problem. And also, if you have a guest or if you've got something that you want to say, like, okay, I was talking to, in the chat room over at Trad Am, and I mentioned something about looking at a guest for this weekend. And, Ben, our next guest name came up through via Kurt. So it's mysterious in the way the Lord works. And I'm going to go ahead and bring our next guest in here. And Kurt actually was able to get in contact with him. And I've met him and worked with him before. And Ben, welcome to the show. Ben Cunningham from Tennessee Tax Revolt and the Nashville Tea Party.
Ben,
welcome
thanks
to
so much.
Welcome to Patriotism.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here and with fellow patriots.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, I remember the first time I met you was at the Gibson rally out in what, September of 2011, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes. September, I think it was October. But,
October. Mm-hmm. And you were very instrumental in that. Man, you had a crowd out there. I'm telling you, it was a great time. Now, why you had me come out there to help you on security is beyond me. But, I'm like 150 pounds dripping wet, But anyways, I had a good time, and we all had a good time, and it was for a good cause. And, we had the government coming in stealing a business's wood from them, basically. And I was wondering... It's still amazing to me, Ben, because, and I understand Gibson had to do something. They couldn't keep fighting this. It was just caught. It was bleeding them, like they were stuck big, hemorrhaging, So uh-huh. they had to go and make a settlement and say, okay, we're going to pay you. I don't even remember what the amount was. It was crazy what they had to pay them to get out of this. And I was just kind of wondering, going to that aspect in time and going now, do you think they did the right thing? Because I think, to me, they just wanted to get away from it. Look, say, we got to make guitars here, We can't keep fighting the federalities here. We got to do something, so.
Yeah, they had gone through quite a process, and Henry Juskowitz, the president, was showed about as much bravery as anybody can expect from a CEO these days. The Gibson guitar is privately owned, so he has a little bit more flexibility in asserting his rights and asserting himself. But he went on all the conservative talk shows. He made his case publicly, and that's something you just wouldn't see a big public company CEO do. They're just so politically correct, so afraid of their own shadow, so afraid of bucking the government, that for him to be as assertive as he was pretty exceptional. And I was really proud of him. You're right, they did end up finally settling the case, but they had gone through a lot. One amazing fact, and you cut me off here if I rattle on too long, but one amazing fact when we had the rally, and this, for those who are not familiar with it, we put together a rally in Nashville in support of Gibson Guitar after the feds came in and raided their factory. They not only raided the factory, they raided the corporate headquarters. They came into their corporate offices with guns drawn. Now, this is the most ridiculous action and it just makes me livid to think about armed federal agents coming into the corporate offices with their guns drawn. The secretaries were scared to death. Everybody was running around like they were under siege by, you know, some group of terrorists. It was just a ridiculous situation when they simply could have called Henry Juskowitz and said, Henry, we have concerns about the way you're using wood. We want to come in. We want to sit down with you. We want to talk. Respect this man as a citizen of the United States with certain basic rights. Instead of doing that, they came into his corporate offices with guns drawn like he was some damn terrorist on the run. I mean, it was the most ridiculous and arrogant abuse of power that you can just about imagine. And we simply, as citizens, couldn't allow that to pass without showing some support for this company and for the people in it. And some of the stories that we learned about afterwards, I talked to the factory manager during the rally, and he said when the federal agents came into the factory, the first thing they said was, you've got to turn off all of your videotaping equipment. You cannot have any security cameras. We're not going to come in here until you turn them all off. In other words, there's no way you can hold us accountable as federal agents. There's no way we're going to come in here with you having any kind of video evidence of what we did when we came in here. I mean, it's basically like some third world country. But they came in, they took the wood, they never charged them, they took basically their means of production, the means of earning a living for Gibson Guitar, and they took it away. It is when our government can do that to us, we are in big, big trouble. So we wanted to show support for Gibson, and we had a rally, and it was a great success, and really appreciate everybody who came out to participate.
We appreciate you helping putting that together, man. I tell you what, I was out there I was watching you for a while, you know, after I met you and after I get to know you a little bit. I didn't have that much time, but I mean, I think you hurt your nose. I mean, you got sunburnt real bad. I mean, I remember that. I'm going, what happened to him? You know, I just seen him a few minutes ago. He was all right, you know.
Yes, I was pretty bunged up. There was a step there. We were in an entertainment venue, and there was a step, and I kept going across it. And about the fourth time I went across it, I completely missed it, and I fell over and hit my nose, and my nose was just bleeding profusely. It looked much, much worse than it was, but maybe the dramatic effect was worth it.
It was worth it, but I got to tell you, I was not working security at that time, okay? So it wasn't me to push you or nothing, all right?
Okay.
But no, watching you run around, man, I mean, you were just, you were hyped up with the whole thing. And the thing is that as you said, they were never charged with the crime. And people, you know, all the listeners out there listening to the Soldiers of Patriotism Talk radio show right now have to understand that they can do this to a business like Gibson Guitar. Now, Gibson Guitar is not a slouch business. They're a multi-million-dollar business, okay? They make some of the finest guitars out there. I mean, there's musicians that would die to get some of these guitars that they have out there. And the federales basically raided them over some bogus story about them having some illegal wood. It wasn't even about illegal wood. It had nothing to do with these tree hugger environmentalists and their wood that was so precious to them. It was about the keyboard frets on the keyboard. Am I right, Ben?
It was. There was absolutely no reason for them to do that. They had letters from both the EPA and the government. I forget right now what country was involved, but they had letters from the government, from that government, saying that, yes, they could export this wood. This was something that they had vetted. Henry Juskowitz is probably, you would probably call him an environmentalist. I mean, he has been very active in the Sierra Club and all these things. The guy is an absolute stickler about following the rules. He wants to follow the rules. And
what banged them up, man, in my opinion, is that they are they also at the time were a pretty good supporter of the GOP and the conservative principles.
Yes, Henry is a conservative and makes no bones about it. But I tell you, it still, in fact, it took a lot of courage for him to go on Sean Hannity and call the feds out after they had done what they had done to him and say, look, this is an abuse of power. This is not right. We cannot allow this to stand. I was very proud of him for doing that. And most CEOs just simply wouldn't have the gonads, if I may say that on the air. Mm-hmm.
The kahunas, whatever, CEO Jones, I mean, whatever you want to call it, man, we go for it here, you know. Same thing too with Chick-fil-A and Dan Cathy. I mean, you know, look what happened there. It backfired on them. And it's going to backfire on them eventually. It's going to backfire on them. So, but anyways, I want to get on to this rally that you've got going on here on the 5th. Coming up here, what's it, Wednesday, the 5th?
Yes, Wednesday the 5th at noon in Nashville at the Capitol.
Go ahead and explain to everybody in the listening audience what that is. And again, I'm talking we're talking to Ben Cunningham from the Tennessee Tax Revolt and Nashville Tea Party, but also please explain to us what this actually means, because I don't think what people understand what the healthcare exchanges per state mean to them.
Well, under the Affordable Care Act, which is the most ridiculously named piece of legislation, of course, they're all of them that come out of Washington have these ridiculous names on them, and they typically, the result of the legislation is exactly opposite of what the name is, and of course, that's the case here. Healthcare is simply going to become more and more unaffordable, but under this act, this Obamacare Act, each state has to make a decision about whether or not they set up what's called a healthcare exchange. And there are essentially three options under the law. The state can take on the responsibility of setting up this healthcare exchange. They can say, no, we don't want to do it, and then the feds will do it. Or they can do a partnership with the federal government in some kind of hybrid arrangement. And what we are trying to do, 22 states have already said, no, we're not going to be a party to this Obamacare. We are not going to set up the exchanges on a state level. We're going to force the feds to do it. And that's what we are trying to encourage Governor Haslam to do, is not to get involved and to participate, to say, we're not going to have any part of it. If you want to set up an exchange or whatever you call it and however you want it to work, you handle it. Because the reality is the feds are going to control it anyway. It's just going to be a silly exercise in state control to think that the state controls this. The state's not going to control this any more than they control Medicaid or education funding that comes from the federal government. It's all going to have strings attached. And we are basically saying to the governor, look, if this is going to happen, we don't want the state to be held hostage for our budget to be held hostage to this federal program. If the feds want to do it, let them do it. So we're calling it the Just Say No rally. And it is, again, this Wednesday at the Capitol in Nashville. And we would love for your listeners or anybody out there who's interested to please come on down and be with us for about an hour and a half during their lunch hour on Wednesday and take a stand and make a statement to the governor. The governor keeps saying, oh, well, this is about I have a lot of these big hospital companies. And, of course, what he's talking about is HCA, the Bill Frist, who used to be our senator here, who claimed to be a conservative, but of course never was. But Bill Frist has gotten to him and said, oh, you need to set this up because of the hospitals. Well, I got news for the governor. He doesn't represent the hospitals or the insurance companies. He represents the citizens of Tennessee. And the citizens of Tennessee don't want to have anything to do with this state exchange. They want the feds to own it. And we want to stay away from it. And that's what we're trying to get across. We have a lot of state legislators are going to join us, and doctors and We're going to have a great time. We encourage everybody to come out and join us.
And that's 12 noon, Wednesday, December 5th at the Capitol.
Correct.
Now, is that going to be at any certain area of the Capitol, Capitol Step?
On the east side of the Capitol. There's a little kind of garden over to the east side of the Capitol. But if you get anywhere near the Capitol, you'll hear us and see us. And just follow the music.
Oh, no doubt. Also, if you go to NashvilleTeaParty.com and you can find out pretty much where all this is happening. I got a couple questions for you, though. Isn't this against Tennessee state law for them to institute Obamacare in Tennessee?
It is, in fact, against Tennessee law. Last year, we passed the Health Care Freedom Act. It was passed by both houses of the legislature, the Tennessee legislature, and signed by the governor. And it very clearly states that a health care mandate is unlawful in Tennessee, and that's what Obamacare is all about. So if the governor wants to bring in a health care exchange, he not only would have to get the legislature to fund it, which is we will fight it tooth and nail, and there are a lot of legislators who will fight it tooth and nail. But not only does he have to get it funded, he would have to get the Health Care Freedom Act, which was passed last year, he would have to get that repealed before he could implement a state exchange. And there are just so many reasons that he shouldn't even be considering this. He says that he's undecided and he has until December 14th to make a decision. But the reality is that, as always, it usually comes down to money. It doesn't come down to the law or constitutional rights. It comes down to money, and he's getting a lot of pressure from the big hospital companies and insurance companies, and unfortunately, those are the people he is listening to. We have specifically been in touch with his communications director and said, hey, let us come and meet with you and talk with you, present our case. But he doesn't want to hear from us. He only wants to hear from the insurance companies, and that's why this rally is so important, for the people of Tennessee to make a statement and to raise their voices and to tell him, just say no to this federal exchange, to this state exchange.
That's correct. And the thing is that, see, they want the hospitals and the lobbyists. Let's boil it down here. They are lobbyists. They are lobbyists for the insurance industry, the lobbyists for the hospitals. And they want this to be set up on the state level because they have more control over it. But
absolutely.
I don't understand their reasoning, because it's like once you get the feds involved in a state matter, you get their foot in the door, the next thing you're going to they're going to own it. And the whole thing, too, is I've heard that the federal government does not have enough money to institute these state exchanges all over the country. So they would love for the states, each individual state, to do it themselves and pay for it, and then they'll come in and take it over.
Oh, absolutely. And they'll control it from the very beginning. I mean, it's the whole thing is just a sham. They will have full control of it from the very beginning. To call it a state exchange is a complete misnomer anyway. The feds are going to control it. They control what kinds of coverage the insurance companies can offer. I mean, and of course they'll come in and say, oh, we're going to offer you all kinds of free coverage. Well, somebody's going to pay for free coverage. But the fact is, you're right, the feds will control it from day one. The insurance companies basically believe that they can have enough influence to pick up a few table scraps here and there. And it's all about the money, and it's all about prostituting yourself to the federal government. I mean, we have a federal government that cannot find its behind with both hands in education funding, in virtually every endeavor this federal government gets involved in, U.S. Post Office, IRS, you name it, Amtrak. They screw up about everything they're involved in. The military really is about the only thing the federal government does really well. And it is absolutely ridiculous to expect that they're going to get involved in health care and anything except costs going through the roof, and regulations going through the roof, and this thing being completely mismanaged, that's exactly what we can expect from the federal government, because that's what we get on education, that's what we get from Amtrak, that's what we get from the post office, that's what we get from every attempt of this federal government to manage anything, and this will be no different. We have got to stay away from it.
Has your group analyzed the cost of this to the state of Tennessee? And I know this is a local matter, so I mean, I know some of our guests are, or some of our people on chat and so on are probably going. But the thing is that this has happened. Obamacare is here, guys. It's here.
Yeah, but this is something that
pertains to everybody.
Ben may be talking about something local to Tennessee right now, but it's something that our listeners throughout the country can take heed of and suggest. Suggest to their within their states to their governors or whatnot, you know, how it might be beneficial we're learning a lot from this, that's the thing about this, Ben, whether it's, sometimes I'll be talking about Texas. It's not that it's, yes, I may be talking about, like you're talking about something specific to Tennessee right at the moment, but it can help other folks. It can help Rick in Florida or me here in Texas. This is the kind of information we got to pass around, and that helps everybody.
Well, yes, true. Luckily, Florida and Texas have both already rejected the state exchange.
Absolutely.
Rick Perry have already done it.
Yeah, we rejected it a couple of weeks ago. We were, I think, one of 22. I think it's 22 states so far, or something like that. I don't remember the exact number.
Well,
that's
Mr. Hislam has got to grow a set, and he's got to reject it. But he's already been talking to the insurance companies. We've gotten, I don't know how many grants, and I understand that you have to apply for these grants on a federal level and so on, Ben, in order to get the money. So you can basically plan on either it going through or not. But I'm thinking, why would you do that? And there was something I heard on the local radio show that Ralph Bristol, I think, in the morning at Nashville, WTN, and she said basically that they've been doing this for years now.
They're going to do it like they do all other federal programs. They're going to front load it, and they're going to say, we're going to pay for it for a year or so. That's the way they've done the Medicaid expansion that's associated with the state exchanges. Hopefully we'll stay away from the Medicaid expansion also. But the Medicaid expansion, the way they're proposing to do that is to fund all of it for 2 years. Then they'll drop back and fund 70% of it. Then they'll drop back and fund 50% of it. And then they'll drop back and fund 30% of it. It is classic bait and switch. They give you a bunch of money on the front end, they get you hooked, and then they pull the funding out on the back end. And the exchanges are the same way. They send you a bunch of money to implement it, but the operating costs they don't fund, and that's where it's going to bite you down the road. We've seen this pattern time and time again with education funding, with funding for local police. It's just the way they do things. They get you hooked, and then they take away the money.
Tennessee it's almost like a local crack dealer or something. They'll give away free product, I guess, until you get hooked on it, and then it ain't free no more.
That's exactly right.
I brought Kurt in here too, Michael, so that he can chime in. I know he's got something to say about this.
Well, I want to throw this in here real quick, because in Tennessee, I commonly, as a Texan, of course, I look at Tennessee from a historical point as well. A lot of Texans' ancestors came from Tennessee, mine included. So, I look at Tennessee and I think of Tennessee as being a very red state like Texas. But yet, sometimes it's kind of funny. Texas or Tennessee doesn't seem... It's red. It's redder than most. But I hear y'all talk about Governor Hanselman and whatnot, and or the reelection of Bob Corker. And I think to myself, where I'll just put it into our shoes, into my perspective. We had the choice between Dewhurst and Cruz. Texas went Cruz. I mean, we went about as far right as you can go. Tennessee's interesting. What is it about Tennessee that it seems to make it a shade or two less of completely red?
Well, it's always been kind of a phenomenon with the East Tennessee Republicans. East Tennessee has always been very Republican, but it's been a very strange kind of Republican. The donut counties around Middle Tennessee, it's good, solid conservative Republicans, fiscally conservative Republicans. But in East Tennessee, where Alexander and Corker and Haslam, all three of them come from East Tennessee, it's a different brand of Republican. It tends to be this kind of wishy-washy, mushy, middle-of-the-road, moderate Republican. And unfortunately, they have a lot of votes over there. And in statewide elections, those kinds of Republicans tend to get elected.
Are you all are a right-to-work state, are you not? Or
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
We don't have an income tax. That's how I got involved initially.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you for that, Ben. I wasn't here at that time, but from what I understand, I mean, you were very instrumental in being up in their face as far as not instituting a state income tax there.
Well, I know Kurt wants to jump in
there.
Still,
they still are trying to push that through, too.
Ron Ramsey, what's he like? Because he just recently started following Conservative Nation radio shows. And I, of course, don't know a whole lot about, other than what Kurt or Bing or you, Ben, are telling me about your governor. What about Ron Ramsey? I mean, because I know that Melissa's in here saying that that Governor Haslam's got to go in 2014. Is this something that we need to jump on and start working for? Because we've only got basically a year before we start gearing up for 2014.
Yeah, there are lots of things that we need to work for. We, a group of Tea Party folks, went up to Cincinnati about a month ago and met with FreedomWorks up there, and also met with the
great group.
Great
group. I love.
Yes, FreedomWorks is a great group, and we met with a lot of activists who had been involved in the in Texas with the Ted Cruz campaign, and also with the group in Indiana that defeated Lugar. And we are working with them to come up with a credible challenger for Lamar in 2014. So there are lots of things in the works. And, of course, I know a lot of Tea Party people are concerned about a challenger for Haslam in 2014. So there are lots of things going on.
I'm thinking Zach Poskovich. That name just seems to come to my mind for some reason.
He ran against Corker.
Yeah.
All of us are, of course, we're Zach people.
Right. Yeah, Zach was a good guy. Unfortunately, just didn't have the money to run much of a statewide campaign, but he certainly was a solid conservative. But
Definitely.
Unfortunately, you've got to have somebody who can raise money and, be a credible electoral threat to these guys. Because that's the only way they'll pay any attention to you. Once they get up there, about the only thing they care about is getting reelected.
That is the funny thing, though, Ben, because, I mean, look, I'm sitting – I helped Melissa and Bing and Kurt and all these guys with Zach. And, Zach is a band of my brothers. We didn't serve together, but we were both Army vets. And, I was on the Zach bandwagon. But I was a pretty instrumental part of Ted Cruz's campaign here in Texas. And I was on with Ted when we were at 3% in the polls, kind of like with Rick Santorum. We weren't even hardly registering in the polls when I started on that campaign. We were up against David Dewhurst. Now, folks, if you're not from Texas and you don't understand, David Dewhurst is big-time rhino. I mean, this guy's essentially Bob Corker, the Texas Bob Corker. And, of course, granted, we had FreedomWorks, Patriot Voices, Rick, all of them, they got behind Ted. But we did nothing short of a miracle in Texas in defeating our Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst to replace Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Yeah, it was a great campaign. You inspired a lot of people across the country, too.
Kurt, did you want to jump in here?
Now, actually, on the subject that you were talking about right at the moment, no. There are situations that in play in Tennessee politics. Certain aspects of it, I need to keep my nose out of at the present time, okay?
That's fine, brother. Yeah, there's also some metropolitan areas like Memphis and so on in Tennessee here, anyways, that you know, contribute a lot to the Democratic vote, shall I say, machine. So it's really not just totally East Tennessee; it's also a little bit of West Tennessee. So we've got this, but in the middle, everybody's pretty much together, you know. So it's just basically on the outskirts; it's on either side of the state, you know. So as Ben was saying, you know, we have some issues here, and it's hard to cipher out exactly what is the cause of the issues. But the thing is that we have to move on from here. We have to get, you know, the rally on December 5th up at the Capitol in Nashville. If you ain't got nothing to do and you want to go out and have a good time, just go out to the rally, because Nashville is. If I had to sit there and talk about 10 cities that I would love to go to, Nashville would be one of them, all right? That would be it. You know, that would be one of them, definitely, of 10 cities in the USA. And we got the Nashville Tea Party and Ben Cunningham going out there to say, just say no to the state exchanges on the 5th. That's Wednesday. And now somebody commented in chat, Ben, and I understand that, but the thing is that why can't we have this on weekend? Well, the senators and the legislators legislators and so on, and the governor is not there on the weekend, so we have to have it during the week, right?
Yeah, actually, and there are events both this weekend and next weekend that we ran up against. We looked at a number of dates, but and then the other thing is you generally get much better news coverage midweek. The news coverage on weekends is not that good, and we can typically get really good news coverage on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So it plus there's a meeting, a reception that day for state legislators at the Supreme Court, and a lot of them will be at the Capitol. Of course, they don't go back into session until January, but many of them will be there. So it was opportune for a number of reasons to have it on a weekday in the middle of the week.
Now, Ben, is there anything else that you're doing that we should know about?
Well, just always working at the local level to empower taxpayers. That's really kind of what happened after the income tax battle here in Tennessee was 2001-2002. We had a good Republican governor, Don Sundquist, who ran on his first term very much opposed to a state income tax, and then he got reelected. And 6 weeks after he got reelected, he said, oh, by the way, I've changed my mind. I think a state income tax would be good for Tennessee. So that launched about a two-year battle with the pro-income tax forces. And we finally defeated him in 2002, but that really was kind of where I got involved. And it was an amazing experience. It was much like a local version of the Tea Party. Sometimes we would have 3,000 and 4,000 people up at the state capitol protesting. And it also developed a farm team of activists who, many of whom went on and ran for the state legislature later on. And I think that we're seeing that with the Tea Party also. It's developing this kind of farm team of activists who are going out and starting radio shows or, you know, getting involved in local politics. And we have about 60 Tea Party groups in Tennessee, and it's just amazing what they're doing at the local level with county commissions and city aldermen. We have 4 or 5 groups in Tennessee, for example, that are creating new county charters. This is, in essence, the constitution of the county. And they're putting things in there like term limits. They're putting things in there like we're going to put the entire check register of the county on the website so anybody can go in there and see what the county's spending. They're just people that are – the Tea Party really has launched a new wave of activism. And the press keeps telling us that the Tea Party is dying, but it's the most ridiculous claim. The Tea Party is expanding every day. I get calls from Tennessee, all across Tennessee, and people are hungry to get involved and hold government accountable, and that's what this is all about anyway.
Well, I tell you what, you keep us in the loop, because if there's anything we can do to help promote anything that you're doing, because I know the kind of work you're doing, I know the kind of hard work you're doing, you just let us know, because we'll get somebody, we'll get, if it's not us, we'll get another talk show host on CNR, Conservative Nation Radio, to host it. So just let us know, because if it's something like this, it's important. And this is important, people, because we need to tell the state, basically. We need to tell the governor that he doesn't have full reign over. He's not king of the state, okay? He's the governor. And he has to account
exactly right.
He has to account to the people. Can you stay on for a little bit, Ben?
I've got to go to another. I've got to run downtown and be on a talk show downtown at a little after four. So I apologize.
Well, thanks for being on, Ben. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, man. Thank you for all the hard work. I know the kind of work you put into this. I've seen it firsthand. So just don't bloody no noses, okay? If you're going to bloody some noses, bloody the noses of our opponents, our enemies.
Good advice. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
Take care, Ben. Have a good weekend.
Hey, brother.
You too.
I'm going to attempt to do something here. Our show is only scheduled for 90 minutes today. I'm going to try to modify it while we're in the middle of the show and hopefully get it to be a complete two-hour show. But we better get Richard in here right now in case it doesn't happen. And let's chat with him. In the meantime, I'm going to try to modify this to 120 minutes.
All right, yeah. Wednesday, December 5th, 12 noon at the Capitol in Nashville. Let's be there.
Richard, you there, buddy?
How you doing?
Hey, Richard, how you doing?
Fantastic, my brother. Folks, we got Richard Gates. Richard, I just want, real quickly, everybody, and I'm going to drop this into the chat room, www.smashwords.com, The Lawn Chair Revolution, our buddy, you guys know him, he's with us every week, pretty much, but Richard has written a book called The Lawn Chair Revolution. It's a blend of history and current issues telling the story of the Tea Party movement. And we have him with us every week, but we're honored to have him as a guest today to tell us about his book. So, Richard, come on in here and tell us what you got to tell us, brother.
Well, I think it was important that we have something out there for the new people that we're going to be bringing on board that can go into a little bit of our history and describe the progressive movement and some of the things that have taken place that just don't hit the news that we need to be aware of, because these are the things that are affecting our politics, they're affecting our culture, and they're affecting our ability to move forward as that shining city on the hill. And I have to go back to your last guest. He made some really great points about a lot of issues, and I think we can do some things to get states' rights improved.
Well, I think we're going to do some damage here, man. I'm telling you, I think we're going to do some damage in the next two anyways. So hopefully that being the case, because I think people are going to start to see the damage here. Well, it won't be till after what? Next year, they're already starting to see the damage, and they've already seen it. That's where I can't really understand why people have voted the way that they did. But oh well, the way, you know, it's here. We've got the same president we had 4 years ago. I know a lot of that was corruption. I know a lot of that was outright fraud. But the thing is that we need to battle that, and because, look, we don't have anybody up there in a position of power to ballot for us. We don't have a Ronald Reagan. We don't have that kind of type of person, that kind of mentality out there to battle this for us. So we have to do it ourselves. And, yeah, Richard, it takes grassroots, man. That's where it all ends up being, you know. That's where it boils down to.
In the last 2 weeks, I've been consulting with a person that I've become a friend with here in Clinton, Iowa, and he's starting a new Tea Party group in Clinton. I have another friend that is also helping start another group. So the Tea Party movement is growing, and I think it's going to grow exponentially.
Now, Richard, do you think that the Tea Party's been marginalized a lot by the media? I mean, I think they have. I mean, I think the whole Tea Party name is like when I talk to people that don't even know, they've never been at a Tea Party rally to save their lives, but, you know, they've been to a football game and they've been to the Ryman over here in Nashville and they can go, you know, hundreds of miles to go see the event that they want to see, but they won't go to see, you know, something that is really dear and important to them. But I'm sitting there going, I don't get it, you know. I mean, these people have just been, they don't understand. The media, I think, you know, has marginalized the Tea Party to a point where I don't even know if that name is a name that we should be using anymore. What do you think?
I think it is. I think we already have a market brand with that. I'm a 912er. I don't think that brand ever picked up. But everybody knows who the Tea Party is. And I think that we need to build on that. And I think we can do that very, very successfully.
How do we dissuade the people that are sitting there going, well, the Tea Partiers are, and I'm not saying this from my own point of aspect or anything, but I'm saying this from the media's point of aspect, because this is what the media portrays the Tea Party to be. It's a bunch of racists. It's a bunch of people that don't want to get anything done, and people that don't want the country to succeed, in their opinion. So how do we get them out of that? I mean, I sit there and fight with these trolls and these people all day long in some cases, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, I can only talk logic and sense to them to a certain point. And after that, I just give up. I mean, should I give up or should I just, you know, should I focus my energies on someplace else or somebody else, or should I just keep trying?
Well, you know, things are going to get worse. I mean, that's a given. With the direction we're heading right now, things are going to get worse. And where we have to make the impact is, how does that impact that individual and their family? And we have to be able to say, you know what? You voted for this moron, and here's what you got. And here's what we can do to resolve that. That's where we have to make the difference. We have to point out how moving back to the Constitution and restoring limited government is going to impact them on a personal level.
Okay, how do you propose doing that? Because it's hard to sit there and try to make an analogy between that and actually what they're trying to, you know, what they're putting in their pocket, you know. People really don't care, I think, a lot of cases, as far as what the government is doing, as long as they're okay. As long as they are okay, their family is okay. So how do we go about doing that?
Well, we reach those people that are impacted. You know, Obama won by 51%. That's not a huge margin. It's very reasonable to expect that we can overcome that just with common sense principles. Because a lot of people are going to be impacted by Obamacare and by this fiscal cliff that I just don't see any cure for that. We can make the case. But we have to do it in a civil manner without all the name-calling and blame-casting. We just have to say, you know, there's a better way, and here's what we can do.
The fiscal cliff you know, was the buzzword. Right after the election, I just noticed the fiscal cliff came out as the buzzword of the day. You say go over or stand back? Stop it.
I would say stand back from it.
Stand back from it?
Sure.
So, in other words, what I'm saying is that let them go off the fiscal cliff by themselves, or do we go off with them? Or do we just say, no, we're not doing this, you know?
No, the Republican Party is going to get the blame either way it goes.
Well, it always does.
Yeah. So I say, you know, let it happen. And then immediately afterwards, publish a plan to reclaim prosperity. We've got to have leadership, and we're not getting leadership.
No, we're not. I mean, that's my idea, too, is just say, look, you know, I want to see what this fiscal cliff is. What is it? What is it? Is the sun going to drop from the sky? Is the moon not going to come up in the morning? You know, if the government does not have the money to spend on more things that they want to spend on, that's my reasoning of this, you know. I mean, I want to see what's going to happen. Let us see what's going to happen. Put it back in the liberals' lap and let it go off the cliff. And let them dive right off like lemons, and then let's see what's going to happen. I want to know what I can live without and what I can't. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. You know, we've got to take the offense on this argument, and we haven't done so at this point.
Yeah, and we need to. We definitely need to. I mean, this is the argument of it's economics. It's not like you're building a pyramid, okay, or you're a rocket scientist. It's basic economics. If people want what you sell, they'll buy it. But the people in this country are not going to buy Obamacare. They're not going to buy it. Some people might. Hopefully not more than 50%.
So what we've got to do is we've got to sell a new argument. And we have to see, we've been overwhelmed with all of the issues, the many, many different issues that's been pushed forward by the liberal media, by liberal politicians, and we've been overwhelmed. It's time for us to take the offensive. It's time for us to take back our country by repealing the agenda of the progressive movement. And we start with repealing the 17th and the 16th Amendment and enacting tax reform through H.R. 125, which is the fair tax. And we can do all of that. We can get that in motion. And we've got to fight back, not just with a shield, but we've got to act of ammunition to go back and counter what they've accomplished in the past 100 years.
Well, as far as your book and so on goes, where can people buy that at? It was already.
I'm just sitting here messing with that, trying to get my Kindle app to work. Can we get that on Kindle, Richard?
Yes, Kindle.
So that would be available on Amazon, I think.
Amazon should be on Barnes and Noble. And
I don't suppose you've done an Audible on it, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, no problem. I like to listen to books, but I can certainly read one.
Well, I just have to ask, have either of you read it?
No, I've not had the opportunity. I'm still in the middle of The Fountainhead right at the moment.
No, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to get it today. So
I'm sitting here trying to buy it right now.
Okay, well, I try to take people through our founding principles, and then kind of lead the story through what's been obstructing our liberty and how those things have changed our culture. There were 45 communist goals that were posted in the congressional record in 1963. And I try to go through that, and I have comments on that as well. But the whole thing is I want to catch people up, because there's a lot of people that we need to have on our side and we need to have involved that haven't been following things. You and I, we've been involved, and we get down into the grassroots and into the weeds on a lot of the issues. A lot of people haven't been following that, and those are the people we need to get them to get caught up on the issues. And this is pretty much a basic story that will tell where we've been, where we're at, and then give some guidelines on what they can do.
Well, you alluded to The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen, which actually I don't read the book, but I read some excerpts of it, and I commented on this 2 years ago, maybe more than that, 3 years ago. And there's 45 goals of the Communist Party that was introduced into legislation, actually, and it never really led the light. But the thing is that out of those 45 that I see, there's probably a good 40, if not more, that have already been instituted. And these are the goals of the Communist Party, and there might be 43. Some are a little bit, it depends on how you want to interpret them. But those are the goals of the Communist Party. And I sit there and I wonder now, in my elderly days here, was Charlie McCarthy really such a bad guy? That they made him out
to me? Yeah, you have to wonder, don't you?
Yeah, because I'm sitting there going, oh, the dude, man, had his stuff going on, I guess, because he noticed, he understood what was going on, and he could grasp the situation, what was going on at the time. The same thing with Ayn Rand in the book Atlas Shrugged, back in the 50s. So, I'm sitting there looking at it, and people don't understand, I think, what has been introduced and what we are up against until maybe they read some of those 46 goals of the Communist Party that they want to infiltrate the United States of America on.
And when you look at them and read them, and you look at our recent history, it's amazing how much they have accomplished.
Oh, it's quite a bit. And they've accomplished a lot of it with the media help. They've accomplished a lot of it with little cronies that they put into power that just do their whim, because they don't care. Look, Nancy Pelosi could retire tomorrow. She doesn't care what happens to her. She's brain dead anyways. I mean, I don't even know how somebody could diagnose her as being dead if she died. But the thing is that she doesn't care. She's going to retire someplace in Guatemala or whatever, someplace where she doesn't have to worry about it, or some third world country like California. So she doesn't really care about what's going to happen to her, but the rest of us have to, I guess, live with it, or deal with it in some aspect, shape, or fashion.
And that's absolutely true. And they have their goals, their agenda, and they've been working on this for 130 years, since 1880. And I'm working on a second book that's going to go a lot deeper into the weeds on just progressivism in America and how it came about. The things they've done to deconstruct our Constitution and to restrict our individual liberty. So that'll be a book that'll be coming out sometime later.
Well, what do you think as far as just individual things that people could do? What would you suggest? Whether it be small things or big things.
There's a huge amount of things that people can do. They can write letters to the editor in their newspaper. Because you'll see a left, in almost any newspaper, you're going to see a left wing agenda in a lot of those letters. And that's, you know, we've got to make the argument in the newspapers. You can call into talk radio. You can write your representatives in the House of Representatives and to your senator. Right now, I'm supporting a national effort to have Tea Party rallies on April 13th, which is a Saturday. And to renounce any affiliation with the GOP to get their attention. Because we've got to have conservative principles, and we can't be kowtowing to the Democrats on any of the principled issues that we support.
No, compromise doesn't work with us. Michael, go ahead. I think you were trying to.
No, I was going
to
say, where is that going to be at? And I'm trying to purchase the book now as we're doing this. To buy it on Kindle, do you have to register through Smashwords?
I don't know. I haven't tried to purchase that book.
Okay, I'll keep messing around with it.
I keep trying, but it keeps saying you own the book. Download it.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't allow me to test anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go through Smashwords.com, you should be able to get it pretty easy.
Yeah, and there's several different ways you can get it through HTML or a JavaScript. I was trying to, I'm messing with the Kindle here, which I'm new to Kindle. I'll get it figured out.
Okay, and you know, you can actually download the Kindle or the other major one down on your computer, so that you can read it in that format on your computer.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and I'm doing the, because when you go to Smashwords, it says format, available ebook reading format, and it's got all kinds of formats here. Some I've never
heard of.
But the price looks really good. Are you there, Richard?
I am there. I'm here.
So what is you say you're working on a second book. What is your tentative? Where are you going with the second book, tentative title on it?
Well, what I'm working on right now is I want to take all of the aspects of the first book and expand on those. And so this next book is going to be about the progressive movement. And I want to take a good hard look at the history of the progressive movement and how they've moved us away from the Constitution.
Progressives as in the new term for liberalism.
Yeah, and actually they've been progressives for a long time.
Yeah, it's funny that you should mention that because I just got finished with Friedrich Hayek's book. And he was talking about classic liberalism, in which I didn't realize we are classic liberals back when he wrote his book, in that we believe in free markets, capitalism, less government. It's funny how terms change their name, or the definition of terms get redone through time, because liberalism now, or progressivism, is, if you will, is not the same as the way Friedrich Hayek saw it.
Exactly. Have you ever read 1984?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so you've got this transformation of the language. You know, good is bad, bad is good. Haven't we seen that?
Oh, yeah, we're seeing it every day.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is the culture and the context that we have to get people aware of. Because if we don't, we're going to have a despot for our government leadership.
Maybe that's something I'll start doing on one of our free nights, is having a book reading night, and I'll schedule a show and just read a book.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
You know, just pick a book, like your book or whomever's book, and just say, you know, tonight we're going to do chapters 1 and 2 of this book. I've been reading,
what do you think?
This book I just got, well, I'm doing The Fountainhead now, but I just recently got finished with a book from Friedrich Hayek. And that book from Friedrich Hayek, I mean, talk about an eye-opener.
Yeah, there's so much information we've got to get out there. And
the road to serfdom.
We've been led down a certain path for such a long time that it's time that we actually take notice of what's going on.
Michael, we got some callers here want to ask questions, I guess. So
let's start pulling them in.
All right. Get Ron here. Poor Ron been on there for 42 minutes. Man, we got some real callers, I tell you what. Mr. Adcox, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now. Can you hear me?
Well, I'm all for anything that's going to make our government get smaller and cost us less. The fiscal cliff to me is that we're going to wake up on the 1st of January and there's going to be government everywhere. It's going to be past that tipping point to where we can stop it from growing any larger. And, I mean, this is crazy. We've elected, I think, you know, Richard said that we were going to be under a despot rule eventually. I think we elected this one back in 2008, and we've been sopping up all the gravy he's throwing at us. And the proof of that is the last election. He threw all this crap at us, and we put him up on our shoulders and said, hoorah for Obama. What's up with America? Americans needs to see the people that know and care about this country out in the streets marching with big flags saying, hell no, no more. And until I can see that, it's going to be hard for me to get excited about anything anybody says. We haven't reached that place where people are ready to say, huh. Whenever that happens, then I'm all for whoever's out there with it. I'll be standing right next to them.
Well, Ron,
that's all I got to say.
Ron,
well, with a pitchfork and tar and feathers, because anything will work.
You know, here's my take on the fiscal cliff thing. Frankly, I think that we just need to hand the keys. You know, Rush Limbaugh said it great earlier this week.
I heard that.
Exactly. He said, look, this man talked about the Republicans and conservatives drove the car off the cliff. We just need to hand the keys to Obama and let him just take us over the cliff, and we don't need to negotiate with socialists. I think I have to agree. I mean, because the difference between falling off the cliff and negotiating with them is not that big a difference.
No, and take the governor off the gas pedal so they can speed it up real quick, you know, because that's what they're trying to do.
Give him all control. We don't. If he gets his way, we can't even question his raising the debt limit. Is that the craziest thing you've ever heard?
Yeah. Unbridled debt limit increases for the rest
Richard,
of
what do you,
your natural born life.
I mean, the difference between negotiate. You know, I mean, I'm of the opinion that the government has enough money already. I mean.
Of course.
Well, this notion that the government doesn't have enough money is just, it befuddles me.
April 13th, my friends.
It's a joke, Michael. The government, this is not a revenue problem. This is a spending problem.
Absolutely.
We do not have a problem raising revenue. If they know how to do it right, we have a spending problem. Look, I don't think there's any true-blooded American in this country that don't mind paying taxes. But when you got 50% of the people not paying taxes and getting money back for not paying taxes and not working and so on, then you got a problem. But the problem is that we don't have an issue with revenue. We have revenue there. There is revenue there. We just have greedy politicians that have little. Pet deals that they've made with lobbyists and so on, which I think all the lobbyists in Washington ought to be round up and dealt with. But they have, and you know, I'm talking about both sides of the aisle. Since when do we have lobbyists in Washington telling them what to do? We need people up there with some kahunas to sit there and say, look, this is what we're going to do. If you don't like it, tough. You're going to fall off the cliff, and you're going to own it. And that's the Republicans pretty much screwed up back in August of 2011 when they sat there and signed off on this 12-panel bill or 12-person panel. You know, since when do they think that out of what 300 some plus members of Congress that can't come to a conclusion that 12 people are? What were they smoking? Put the crack pipe down. Seriously.
Well,
Richard,
you know,
what do you think
I'm going to date all of us a little bit here, but do y'all remember the film Cool Hand Luke?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
The captain, Strother Martin, when he said, what we've got here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
What we've got here is a failure to control spending.
Oh, definitely. It's a big one. That is the problem. These people, look, the more money you throw at the wall, you know, thinking it's going to stick, it's just the more money that you're throwing at them so they can spend more money. And it just, the cycle keeps going on and on and on, you know. They can't get out of it. They are in the spending frenzy, and it's all because they want to garner the vote. They want to get the lobbyists. They want to get all these other people to vote for them, to get their constituency to vote for them. Well, I think I got a little problem with that, and that's the American people are not going to put up with it, because you can only put so much money at a problem, what they perceive as a problem, and then the American people are not going to deal with it no more. They're going to say enough's enough. Now, what will happen when that happens is a different story. But until then, I guess we got to sit there and keep plugging on.
April 13th, my friends.
Brother Rick,
we need to get out of the street.
Yo, Michael, how's it going?
It's going good. What do you have for Richard?
I'm just enjoying the conversation, and I'm hoping to procure his book sometime. You know, because I do have a hard time with finances because my mom's my financial advisor. But I am going to try and get that book.
Well, it's just a couple of bucks, so I don't think it'll be that hard.
But he's a big supporter.
Yeah, true. One thing is, I thought that I had heard him say that he has an event coming up on the 13th, I think I heard him say.
Huh? Stuff I scratched off of.
Richard?
April 13th, Tea Party rallies across the country. We've got to get back out on the streets.
And I scratched this and
play a little. Oh, nice. Yeah, that's one of the things that, the better we don't get blown up on December 21st, I'm going to try and do. You know, and as far as the fiscal cliff goes, I said this on another show. Let the Democrats take us off the cliff. However, we just got to get the F out the car.
There you go, Brother Rick. Let's bring our buddy Barbara in here. Barbara?
Hello, everybody. Thanks, Richard, for talking about what you've been talking about lately. I have to dig for the book, too. I've been writing to my senators. The only thing I have not yet done was written to a letter to the editor to the newspapers. So that I will go ahead and do. But the government now wants if the debt ceiling doesn't get raised, they're going to stop Social Security. So this is their game that they're playing. And for me and all of us out there, we've all had it. Like, I'm ready to go up there and, like, just get in Obama's face and tell him like it is. But I don't think I'd get that close without getting arrested. I really would like to, though.
You know, but I could enjoy watching that, Barbara.
You're funny. Well, you've heard me.
We'll bail you out.
Oh, you would? Thank you. Start a collection now. No, he wants to keep growing it, but he just appoints people. So how do we stop him from growing it? We already have the commerce for businesses. And now that he wants to have a business department.
A business czar.
Yeah, you know. And why don't they take a pay cut? Or something. Yeah, defund the czars. Yeah, good idea, Chris.
What about that, Richard? This man usurps the Constitution at every chance he gets, and he just we have more unappointed people or appointed officials that have direct influence over our lives, more so than any other president. I mean, the czars, the people being appointed, like this business czar that he wants to appoint. Is this just something we're going to have to put up with the next 4 years? I don't think this is constitutional.
It's not. But here's the deal. We no longer have ambassadors from the states that represent the states in Washington. Before the 17th Amendment, the Senate represented the states, and they kept in balance the sovereignty of the states. That's what we've got to reinstitute, and that's why it's important to repeal the 17th Amendment. because we've got to have a voice in Washington, not only for the people, but for the states, to maintain their sovereignty and their 10th Amendment rights.
Yeah, they will if they want to be reelected. Good point, Chris. I mean, I write to my house, my, what the hell is she? My house.
Did I lose y'all?
Didn't lose me.
I'm here.
Oh, Barbara, were you speaking? Oh, we lost Barbara midstream. Okay, that's what happened. Barbara, call back, buddy. We were listening to your question and we dropped you. I don't know where she was going with that, Richard, but we do have a problem with the czars and the people that are just appointed Harry Carey by this president. I mean, I don't know how we change that other than to change this president. I wouldn't care if it was a Republican president. There's just a point at which the appointing of these people to cabinet positions, they're unelected officials that have arbitrary control over our lives, like the EPA. This is a problem.
Didn't Bush have czars too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I believe he did.
And look, I appreciate what Bush did for us after 9/11 and protecting the country, but a Bush fan, I'm not a very big Bush fan. He's, in my book, a neoconservative, a big spending Republican.
Well, you know, the first Bush signed on to the Rio Treaty for Agenda 21. I mean, we've got to do a lot of soul searching and a lot of hard looks at where the Republican Party is taking us.
Yeah, but look here, Bush was doing pretty good up until the Congress got took over by the Democrats in 2007, and then from then on, Bush was hogtied. I wasn't a fan of Bush hogtied. I was a fan of Bush doing what was right. And he had a good streak of that. You got to give a man credit.
Well, and I do, Ron, but we have to be honest. W, and look, I love W, and I love Laura Bush. They're good people. But he and Karl Rove, probably the death knell to the Reagan conservative movement was taking on H.W. as the vice president. At the moment we took him on as our vice presidential nominee in 1980 was the death of the Reagan conservative movement. And there's a really good book that you can read.
I can see that.
By Tom Palkin called Bringing America Home. And it goes into the whole Machiavellian and neoconservative movement that destroyed the Reagan conservative movement with the nomination of H.W. And I love the book, and I love H.W., don't get me wrong.
Hush.
But these guys are neoconservatives, and Karl Rove is the worst of them.
Right, and you remember, I remember this because it kept creeping me out every time I heard it was the New World Order, the One World Order, the New World Order. It was the same thing over and over again from Bush 1, you know, and then his son pretty much picked up on that. And I'm like, what is going on with this New World Order? We don't need a New World Order. We need our World Order, you know. And that, I don't know, man.
We need American sovereignty.
American sovereignty. We don't need to be dictated. We don't need our elections to be mandated but controlled and monitored by the UN. For God's sakes, the UN monitoring our elections.
We've got Barbara back. Let's get her back in here, and then we need to get Boyd in here as well.
I don't know what happened. That was
weird. We lost you, buddy.
I know. My computer just started ringing.
They do that sometimes. But anyway, we've added a little bit to the conversation. You were asking Richard a question, when we lost you, we went into the Bush family. So jump in here.
Oh, into the Bush family? I like George W.
Barb, go back to your question.
I forgot what my question was.
I do that all the time.
CRS.
Well, yeah. And then I got distracted trying to figure out what I was doing. So go ahead, bring Boyd on.
Boyd, come on in here.
Sorry.
Barb, I didn't mean to jump all over you. I wanted your question. It was going good. It was just, you were getting right down to the nitty-gritty, and all of a sudden the grit just went away.
They probably heard me and said, I don't want her talking about that anymore.
Hey, look, we've proven we don't do that here. We put up with Stanley for 2 hours.
Yeah.
No, not you. I mean, maybe they're listening.
Oh, yeah. Big.
I hope
so
they
are
listening.
Black choppers flying around or something?
Black helicopters.
Yeah, they actually flew over us last night. My husband said they were coming to get me.
All right, Ray Lolita. We don't.
Oh, we were talking about the czars and all the people that they have.
Yeah, that was one thing, yeah.
I don't remember. Go ahead, Boyd.
Well, Bush had his own czars that he appointed, and towards the end there, he got a little bit socialist on us and so on, and started bailing out companies that were too big to fail and so on. He pretty much started that movement, but as far as being just a tough leader, I thought he was okay at that. It's just with what we got now, this guy is just, you know, just flipping the finger off to America and walking away and saying, you know, ha-ha, I done fooled y'all. I fooled everyone. And same thing with his wife and everybody else. But, you know, I'm just pretty much tired of it. But, yeah, we need to get grassroots. We need to get, you know, more grassroots, actually. And I thought we were grassroots before, but obviously not. Something happened in the last election. I know fraud played a big part of it, but something happened in the last election, and I don't know if America just lost its spirit. I don't know.
A lot of people don't know the issues and the voting on them, and that gets me. That really bothers me big time, because the people that don't care or don't have a clue, our lives are in their hands.
They're dangerous.
They are dangerous.
They got four Americans killed just about a month and a half ago.
Yep. And
we had a lot of people that were like the Ron Paul supporters. I didn't get my pick in the primary, so I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to say it, but, you know, we did that, and it was for selfish reasons that we couldn't choose the better of two candidates.
Well, it is selfish reasons, in my opinion. I mean, to me, that was very selfish, you know, that they said, well, I'm not going to sit there and blame the last election cycle on Ron Paul supporters, okay? I didn't get my...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just using them as an example.
No, I know. I'm just saying I want to put that out there so people don't misconstrue what I'm saying, okay? Because I don't want somebody calling me up and saying, hey, you just, you know, whatever. But what I'm trying to say is that this was, in my opinion, this was massive voter fraud, okay? And I'll tell you that. But there's nobody calling nobody on it. You know why? I think because they all do it to some extent. And that's why I'm trying to sit there and figure out, okay, where do we go from here? But, you know, I think we already know where to go from here. We need to get more people involved in educating. We need to educate people because if they're stupid, they're going to vote stupid. And you can't fix stupid in a lot of cases, but you can at least try to cure some of the people that might be bright enough where you can help them out. There's a lot of people out there that say, you know, I really just don't know enough about this candidate to make an intelligent, informed decision. So, you know, what do I do? You know, those people there you can help. The other people that said, oh, I'm voting Obama because I want my Obama phone and I want my this and that. You can't. You're not going to help them. I'm sorry. You might as well give up on them right now.
Right. And we have to focus on the ones that we can do something about.
Right, in my opinion, because the other ones are a waste of time and energy. And somebody's dog is going freaking out, and it ain't mine. So.
Yeah, that's mine.
Oh, okay.
Hey, folks, I've got to go. It's my mother's birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to your mom.
Hello. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. But I've got to go. I got a ride here, so I've got to take off.
How old is she?
76.
All right.
Very good.
Wish her a happy 76 from Alaska.
I will do that. Thank you very
much.
North
Carolina.
And from Tennessee.
All right. Alaska, North Carolina, and Tennessee. I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
Thank you.
All right.
Richard.
You guys have a great night.
You too. Hey, I just, guys, I just went and grabbed this book since we brought up the Bush family and being a Texan here. And I've got a few things I wanted to read from the Starting Over chapter. Now, this is a book. It's called Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. It's by Tom Palkin, who was our workforce commissioner down here in Texas. And he was on Ronald Reagan's administration. And I just want to, there's a few lines here I want to read that I have always found very interesting. And I just want to stipulate that I loved HW and I loved W for what they did for the problems that we had in the Middle East and their strong determination there. But let's not fool ourselves. This family is a family that has always been and proven themselves to be big spending Republicans. They are typically the kind of family that believes that the answer there's the Democratic answer, which is spend more money. There's the neoconservative answer, which is spend more money. And both HW and W have proven themselves to be that way. After this current president, the second largest person or president that has increased spending to our country was George W. Bush. But I just want to read this real quick. He says, Richard says, the time has come to make it clear that George W. Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Henry Paulson, and all of the rest do not represent the principles of American conservatism. We should not support Republican candidates for president just because they happen to be the lesser of two evils. That has not worked out well for conservatives in the post-Reagan era of Republican politics. Nor should we remain silent when the bunch of phony conservatives calling themselves neoconservatives hijack the major intellectual organs of the conservative movement and use them to promote their ideological agenda. He goes on to say, similarly, the neoconservative architects of George W. Bush's strategy to defeat militant Islam were a group of arrogant intellectuals with very little, if any, military experience. And that goes back to that New World Order that you were talking about that includes Bill Kristol and Paul Wolfowitz and that whole gang of neoconservatives being.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with him at all on that, you know. I mean, like I said, it just gave me the creep. It creeps me out to this day when I even hear the term New World Order, because it's not America. That is not what America is. It's not what America is supposed to be. And, yeah, we have to start watching these people, man, just because you think that you're voting for somebody that's on your side doesn't necessarily mean that. because these people were turned. So the, you know, they get in there like a bull in a china shop, and then they end up being like a lamb on lying down on Broadway, you know, where somebody's stepping on them all the time. And so I don't know. You know, we can only vet these people so much. You know, other than that, there's not much else we can do. Look at poor Romney. You know, Mitt Romney, probably one of the most character principled people that we've had up there. And the GOP basically, in my opinion, just threw him right under the bus. That's the way I look at it. They don't want nothing to do with him no more. And I didn't have no problem, really, with Mitt Romney, but he wasn't my choice. But it was the thing is that at the end of the day, I'm sitting there looking, going, you're not explaining the message. You're not getting across to the people what should be the message. The message is prosperity. Yeah, I made a bunch of money. So what? I made it, you know, on my own.
Well, I'll tell you who I think got threw under the bus was not Mitt Romney. And this is just my opinion. Whom I think got thrown under the bus was us. You and me and the Tea Party. I'll just give you an example. Prior to Texas having its primary. Now, originally we were supposed to have our primary. It got changed. It was prior to the 31st of March. As you all will remember, Rents had changed the rules. Well, actually, Steele. It started with Steele for our last primary election. Where if your primary was before the 1st of April, it was supposed to be proportional delegates. Now, it didn't happen that way in Florida, nor did it happen that way in Arizona. That aside, because of our redistricting in Texas. Now, and mind you, and look, I hate to brag, but I am. You know, I love me some Texas. We're 155 delegates in our primary, folks. We're the big kahuna. Texas is the big kahuna in Texas in Republican primary. 155 delegates. Winner take all. Because of redistricting, our primary got pushed back to beyond the 1st of April. Steve Monasteri tried to get us back to a winner take all state. And Rents and the national GOP said, if you do that, we're going to penalize you half your delegates. Folks, whether you agree with me or not as to who our nominee should have been, let me just say I was a Rick Santorum supporter. Texas could have made Rick Santorum our delegate, our nominee. Had the national GOP not threatened us with half of our delegates, and we could have went back to winner take all, our nominee would have been Rick Santorum, not Mitt Romney. Would we have won with Rick? I don't know. But I am so pissed off with the national GOP, it's not even funny.
Well, along those same lines, Brother Michael, I think that Herman Cain got railroaded by the GOP as well.
Absolutely did. And he got railroaded by my governor and Mitt Romney. He got railroaded by people running.
Well, he got railroaded, but he was not the GOP party establishment toe-the-line type of person. So they wanted him gone. And, you know, he just said, I had enough of this. Nothing was ever proven with him. But when you bring up, and you know, when you keep telling a lie about somebody, eventually it's going to stick. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I'm sure that there's people who can sit there and tell lies about me all day long, you know, and eventually something is going to stick, and somebody's going to sit there. And the same thing like I asked Richard earlier, you know, and Ben too, you know, the Tea Party movement has become misaligned. The name is just, when you bring up the name, it's just like, it's almost like coal. It's almost like carbon. You know, it's this black stuff that's nasty. You don't want to mess with it, you know. And, you know, it's like the environmentalists do with carbon, CO2, and they, you know, they want to make a name stick so that you, you know, it's marketing. So as a person is going to go, oh, I don't want nothing to do with that. It's going to hurt me. I don't want nothing to do with that, you know.
Not only are we judged by those that support us, but we're judged by our detractors as well. And I take pride in a lot of those detractors that say bad things about me. I take pride in that. But when it comes to our national, to our Republican National Committee, doing things to ram, and look, I don't want to bash Mitt. This is not about bashing Mitt. But I'm going to bash him anyway. I didn't want him for our nominee. He wasn't my first, second, or third. He wasn't even my freaking last choice. We've been down this road with Bob Dole. We went down this road with McCain. I'm sick of it, Bing. I'm sick of it.
I feel your pain, man. When will people, I guess, realize that we can, as conservatives, win elections? We've done it before. You know, we've done it before. So we have a history also of tax cuts. When tax cuts are made, they encourage wealthy to spend money. They get the economy stimulated. The wealthy says, oh, I can breathe easier now because I'm pretty sure that my money is going to make me money. But we've got this class warfare gig going on over here in Washington. We've got the Obamas. They don't care about class warfare. They love it, you know. I mean, Michelle's putting the finger off at everybody she can, because as long as she can make her little trips and go off wherever she wants to go, then, you know, she can take her fat behind with her, too. Go somewhere and don't come back. But the thing that's what they envy. They have to have class warfare because they will not be able to institute their plans that they want to, as far as the communist agenda goes, unless they have class warfare and envy.
Well, let me just say this real quick, and then we'll bring in some our guests that are on here to finish up, because we're about to run out of time. But we have got to make, and we started the show out with this, and maybe this is a good way to end it. The RNC has to be made to understand that we're not to be taken for granted, and they continue to do so. I no longer contribute any money to the RNC. My money goes directly to the candidate that I support. I think if everybody gets on that same bandwagon, you know, because money talks. And the test that's coming up is this quote-unquote fiscal cliff. If John Boehner and Mitch McConnell negotiate with this socialist, and they raise taxes on anybody, I don't care who the hell it is, I don't care how much money they make, the richest people in the world pay enough in taxes already. I'm not defending the rich. I'm defending capitalism. The
government
makes enough goddamn money already as it is. They don't need any more money from any American citizen. They need to get their asses under control and get their spending habits just like you and me. I sit down every night and I sweat my budget with my wife. I have to sweat my budget, so do they. I have to make choices on what I'm going to spend my money on, so do they. I'd like to upgrade my website, but I don't have the C-note right now. I'm going to have to wait a month or two before I can do that. That's what you call responsible. That's what you call being responsible with the money that you make. And if our government can't figure that out, then they just need to get a freaking grip, because they've got enough. I'm sorry, I went off on a rant, Bing. Let's bring this here.
That's all right, man. You know, the thing is, you ever been to a swimming hole and you don't know how deep it is? You're going to jump in head first? No, you're going to sit there and test the water. You're going to find out how deep that hole is, because we don't know how deep this hole is that we worked ourselves into. And that's the whole thing. This fiscal cliff to me is a joke. Seriously, because I want to know how deep it is. I want to see it. I want to see it happen. I say go for it. Pop it.
And I don't care how deep it is. Quite honestly, I'm at the point now, we just need to fall into that frickin' swim hole, and we need to sink or swim. And when people start losing, and, you know, look, people are already losing their jobs because businesses, we're laying off 70,000. Look, guys, my wife and
I. 1/3 of the workforce.
But I'm sweating my job right now. Bank of America is laying off 70,000 people. 70,000. I sweat my job every freaking day. But I'm no other person in this country. I just happen to vote the right way. For those people that voted for the other side, kiss my lily white redneck ass. Because you people voted for this crap.
And don't let the screen door hit you with a back or the good Lord split you, too.
Ron, come on in here.
All right, Ron. Quick.
Look here, Michael. Next time, you know, quit beating around the bush. Just tell us what you think, okay? Is that a plan?
That's a plan, brother.
That'll be good. Let Boyd get in here and say something. He ain't had to be able to play much. Take it easy.
Take care of you, Georgia Redneck.
You know what you're looking at right now?
God, I can only imagine. I'm going to say.
My shiny Georgia.
Boyd, come on in here.
Yeah, it's a pretty good show, but, you know, this physical cliff, I think the Republicans ought to grow a set of balls and sit back and let us go off the cliff, and the way they do it without getting blamed for it is they do like Obama did when he was a senator. Vote present.
Yep, correct.
Absolutely.
Just vote present. Don't vote yes. Don't vote no.
Well, if Boehner betrays us and McConnell betrays us, we'll know by year's end. We might see the Tea Party grow in lengths that we can't even imagine yet.
We're gonna get nasty here. Let's get
I believe we're in the most dangerous time we can be in right now is in the lame duck session.
You're absolutely right, Boyd.
Kurt, let's get you on here real quick.
And Barbara, you're on deck.
Okay, I've said enough for today. Barbara, you go ahead and finish up there, girl, okay?
All right, thanks.
That's gentlemanly of you, Kurt.
Kurt's the father of this outfit.
And we're the kids. I love your rants, Michael, because they're right, the same thing that I rant about. So it should be me and you in front of Obama pointing the finger saying, God damn it, do it. Do it this way, the way it's supposed to be done. And I don't want to see us go over the cliff, but we will, because the past 4 years, this administration proposed the same damn thing. And they're not giving an inch, and we've got to cut spending before we do anything else. Money. They need to take a pay cut up there. Obama doesn't need that much freaking money, and neither does the rest of them.
They damn sure don't.
We will go over cliff, whether it's on our watch or not. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And Barbara, we thank you for joining us again today. We love having you on and getting to listen to your Northeastern wisdom from North Carolina. Because
Michael, we got some great things coming up, man. I just wanted to touch on a few. We got the hashtag. We just follow Facebook. We got CNR show or pound hashtag CNR show. And that will get back to us. And then we got some other things coming up, too. I'm totally revamping Trad Am by the end of the year. And I got a new mic. I think I sound better. I don't know. Maybe I don't, but
you sound a lot better, brother.
Well, that's cool. But yeah, carry on with your bad old self, Michael.
All right. Well, hey guys, it's been a Sunday. Stay tuned. We got a lot of good stuff coming on. I want to thank Teresa. I want to thank Barbara. I want to thank Ben. I want to thank Richard. I want to thank Rick, Bing, everybody, the Alaskan, Boyd, Kurt, everybody that participated today. We love you all. We'll see you next Sunday. Guys, there is no turning back.
The bourgeois.